pushing myself to go outside more and to walk more and to go to the gym and like really take that more seriously, because I neglected it for years and years and years, trying to focus on my career, you know, trying to prove everyone wrong, trying to chase my dreams essentially.
So CitadelTheory.com is where it's going to be. And Citadel Theory, the YouTube channel. Basically, I have my old podcast is called The Bitcoin Path, and I'm rebranding everything to be Citadel Theory.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's going to go on YouTube, on, it'll be on Spotify, on all different places. You're going to be everywhere, man. You're going to be famous.
Hell yeah. Hasn't been something that's interested me too much, but I mean, you know, I'm happy to share my thoughts on things. See what people can come of it, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's why I wanted to talk to you, because we connected in Costa Rica and deep in the jungle at the creators retreat that Sunny and Shannon hosted. And I don't know, we just kind of hit it off, got a similar sense of humor and everything. But I was really interested in your story. And so I wanted to kind of dive into that, because what I'm trying to focus on right now is different stories of personal development and how cultivating masculinity, cultivating like all different aspects of your life has improved your life in various ways. So what did your life look like a year ago?
So 1 year ago, it was July 2023. I was soon to take part in the first flow culture about 3 weeks from now. And I was currently at the World Series of Poker in Las Vegas, Nevada, the beautiful desert. Every day it was like 110, 111 Fahrenheit. And I was there for like 50 days that summer. I played poker like 48 of the 50. Didn't go to one club, didn't drink alcohol one night. And it was a cultivation of my like 6.5, 7 year poker career, basically, where, you know, I was just firing tournaments, average about $3,000. And I kind of knew a few months prior to that like I was on the tail end of my poker career, because I kind of just lost interest. Basically, when I was 23, 24, I had a really, really high drive to play poker. Like, I knew in high school that like this was my personality. I was good with risk analysis. I was good at math. I was a math major in college. Was always really good at math since I was 4 or 5 years old. And poker, with how comfortable I am with risk and how much I just kind of looked up to other poker players in high school, I kind of knew that like that was a really big possibility for me to have a career. So after college, I had a sales job for 10 months. I hated it. Didn't really like the 9-to-5 schedule. Wasn't really like at that point, maybe very social or talkative. And I wanted to try sales to get some people skills, knowing that if I didn't like it, I can always go back to math. And basically, I was living in Santa Monica at the time. And, you know, there's like 5 or 6 casinos nearby, you know, within like an hour drive. So I was playing poker on the weekends for fun. And I realized like a lot of the players in LA that play poker are just not very good. And I wasn't that good myself, but I knew that if I trained myself how to be good, like, you know, you can learn a lot on the internet nowadays. I was able to take a couple poker courses online. And within, you know, I quit my job, and within like a year, you know, I was pretty good. Right before I quit my job, though, I won the tournament for $50,000. It was like my yearly salary at my sales job, and I won it in like a weekend. So damn. It gave me the bankroll to quit and really go all in on poker. But yeah, so I guess literally 6 years of my life was spent in casinos, basically. Like, you know, in 2019, 60 hours a week I played on average that year. Some weeks
60 8. Hours a week of just playing straight poker.
Just playing straight poker. And then obviously studying on the side as well. I didn't go out, more or less. Like, I was really, really dedicated to it because I loved it. It didn't feel like work to me. And everyone who told me in 2017 when I quit my job that, you know, oh, you're trying to play poker, like, you can't do that. You know, you're not the one that can make it. And I knew deep down who I was and that I could do it, right? With dedication, with focus, with persistence, and with consistency. And I ended up doing it. Ended up being great. You know, obviously a lot of volatility in poker. I think, yeah, I had a few losing months, of course. But, you know, as long as you believe in yourself and you're willing to work at it and you can really treat it like a job, you know, it is a job and it's my life. So for me, it was like live or die kind of thing. Like, I was all in on this. So yeah, fast forward it, you know, COVID kind of shut things down a bit. And then that took a little break. And then the poker scene wasn't quite the same after that. It kind of, people who came back, like, it just, you had to wear a mask, and there was like glass windows up in between the players. Like it was just kind of like a weird setup. But then 2023, I decided to go all in on the World Series of Poker, which I'd been playing for like a few years every summer in Vegas. And then yeah, it was really good. I had a successful summer. I had one good tournament basically, where I won like most of the money. And then a few weeks later is when I went to the first Flow Culture, Shannon and Sunny's creator entrepreneur type retreat. I got accepted to that in April, so it was a 4 month wait. And that summer of poker, basically, like I knew I was going to go to that, and I knew that it was something I was interested in, because I was at that point getting more interested in health and wellness. I realized that the lockdown had taken a kind of a toll on my body, and I wasn't as healthy and wasn't as fit as I wanted to be. And I didn't have like a good friend group. A lot of the friend group in poker was like people who are incentivized to take your money. So the friends, like, yeah, they're friends, but like you can only really make a one or two really close friends, because the incentives are that if you reveal yourself as a poker player, they'll figure out how you think, and they can kind of get to know how you play and do better against you, basically. So I was craving like real relationships basically at that point. And then when I went to the first Flow Culture, I had a epiphany type experience where I experienced so much love and so much like the friendships I made just in that in 5 days were like crazy how deep you got to go basically with people. And I had this epiphany that, one night on psilocybin for the Camilo show, that like poker, the lifestyle, just I was done. Like I literally was like cold turkey. Just like I just knew I had to move on to the next thing in my life. And ever since then, it's been 11 months. I've played 20 minutes of poker since then only. And yeah, it's been a journey for sure.
Yeah, what I love about that story is how is that part where everyone was kind of telling you, no, you can't play poker and actually make it. You can't play poker for a living. That's a game. Or you need to take your life more seriously. You need to do something that is more along the lines of like what I think is possible. Or
Yeah.
I imagine usually that's where people are coming from, is like, well, that's not in my lens of perception of reality of like what's actually possible. So there's no way that you can make that happen.
Exactly. It's just like they're projecting their own kind of like view on their life onto me, like, because for them it's impossible. So therefore for everyone it's impossible. But it's
Right.
not necessarily true. If you really everyone's unique and everyone has their own skill sets. And if you really know who you are, you can seriously like make a do really well out there if you're true to who you are on the inside, basically.
Yeah. Do you feel like you always had a certain level of self-belief, like that strong self-belief, or did that come kind of more through that process? Was that sort of a seeding of that for you?
Yeah, I feel like it was always there at a young age, especially with like specifically math and baseball. Those are my two strong points. So, when I was five, I was really good at both. And then I ended up when going into fourth grade, I got put into I had to switch elementary schools to go to a GATE program, Gifted and Talented Education. And I did really well there. And then all throughout high school, I got like straight A's basically. I was taking like AP calculus when I was 16 and just always had this kind of like, I kind of knew I was like, pretty intelligent basically. And then one of my favorite stories from college, I was in this class, game theory. It was math 437. It's like a foreign level math class. All math majors pretty much in there, maybe a few math minors. And it was like the first exam in this class. And this is when I knew I was completely different than everyone else in the whole class. So it was like the last question of the exam. It was seven questions. The first six were pretty easy, I thought. And I knew the rest of the class thought they were pretty easy as well. And there was like 2, 3 minutes left in the class, and it was a Friday. And the questions, it was game theory. So like we're playing games kind of thing, but like through linear algebra and through matrices and stuff. And the question said, question seven, option A, you take 5 points. The others are fools. So you take 5 points, you get to go home, enjoy your Friday, enjoy your weekend, call it a day. Option B is play a game between your classmates. It's called the lowest unique positive integer game. You pick a if you pick a positive integer less than 50, and it's the lowest and unique one, so it's the lowest one from all the class, and it's unique as in no one else has picked that same number, then you get that many points. And I was sitting there thinking, I'm like looking around, I'm like, there's like most of these dudes are picking A. Like they're not going to tell their mom that they could add a 92 and that when they and they and they got an 87 because they gambled it on option B. I was like, let's be real, like they're all taking option A pretty much. So I was like, okay, I need to go B, and I need to go big on this first exam and set myself up for the rest of the class, later for exams two and three. And let's actually go for like, I was thinking like, what do I pick then for B? And I was like, okay, I could pick eight, and like maybe get three extra points kind of thing. And that's probably the lowest one. But I was like, maybe someone else will pick eight, and then it'll avoid us both because our answers aren't unique anymore. And I was like, okay, I could go 12, but I'm just like, wait a second, why don't I just go huge? Like, why don't I just go for like a huge number and like just risk my five to win a big number? Because that makes, in my mind, it made so much sense to like, I don't need to win that often to really get that big reward. Because that was what the question was. Yeah, do you want a big reward or not? And if you're gonna go big and someone else cuts you down, then you lost. My thesis was no one else is really gonna play. So I was like, okay, so less than 50, 49 is the super max. I was like, maybe there's one kid who might go like 45 or 46 or maybe 42. I don't know. I was like, okay, I'm gonna undercut him just a little bit, and I'm gonna go 37, and I'm gonna put that and go home and not think twice about it. Just go with my instinct. So I put 37. We come back on Monday, and teacher's like, well, Question seven. We have 22 kids in the class. Only two people chose option B. And I'm thinking, like, I hope he picked 40 something, you know, like, so I get my points.
Right.
He's like, well, one person picked 37. And the class is like, what the heck? Like, no way. Like, who would do that kind of thing? And he's like, the second person put zero, which is not a positive integer. Positive integer has to be one or more. So his answer is ruled out. And the whole class is like, who put 37? And like, I just like poker faced them all. I just kind of like stood there blank and didn't want to know it was me because I just like kind of wanted to just let them all freak out and not know who was the star of that moment.
Right.
And then the teacher asked the kid, they're like, who put zero? And the kid's like, I put zero. He was like, I wanted to fuck everyone over who tried to go for more. But what he should have done was just put four because it's
Right.
impossible. No one ever put below four. So he could have got 4 points, picked a positive integer, and screwed me over. And instead, because he can't read, or basically he didn't do the directions, essentially, he was able to make me get 37. And then ever since that moment, I truly, truly knew that I was different than like the kids who went to college and were math majors and just thought, you know, in the box, right? Like they just thought, oh, just do this, you know, get my 5 points, go home, I'm happy, my mom's happy, whatever, you know. And yeah, like that really like set the tone for my poker career, basically, just trusting myself and trusting my intuition and really like leaning on my own gut, essentially.
It's such a counterintuitive in most of school. Mostly they're treating you the same. They're treating everyone the same and grouping you all into similar classes and whatnot and putting you along a basically the same career trajectory. So to have that moment really solidify for yourself that no, like I'm not like everyone else. There's this unique part of me. That's a powerful moment.
Yeah, definitely. I remember one my friend's dad's a few years later when I told him I was going to play poker, you know, he was probably the most against it of anyone. And his view of life was just that's impossible. And he told me, he was like, you're going to come home and you're going to be homeless one day. He's like, I watch. 1 year later, like to the month, he said, I heard that you come home from the casino in a Rolls Royce. Like I had a lot of success that year. And he just like it just completely blew his mind that like I was able to prove him wrong, and now I was this like kind of like this godlike figure in his mind. And it was just interesting to like see the same guy who was, you know, in his 50s or 60s, you know,
Yeah.
with me. And that was pretty funny. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I knew who I was and I knew I would do this, and you know, I've put the work in. That's the main thing. Like I was able to really cut down my social life. And poker, you know, you got to work on the weekends. That's when like the games are good, and especially at the lower level, which is where I was at. So Friday, Saturday nights I was out there playing, and it was fun, you know, I had a good time.
Right. Yeah. So I imagine that took a lot of sacrifice on the social side of things, right? Where all your friends probably going out to party or go do social activities, but that was when your game time, you were trying to work.
Exactly. Yeah. Luckily for me, I kind of sent it pretty hard in college the last year, my 5th year. I did got the partying out of me a bit. So, and
Right.
I hated my sales job so much that when I realized I can make money in poker, I was like, I don't even care about partying. I just don't want to work a job. I was like, I want this freedom and I know I can do this and I'm going to work my ass off to make sure it happens, basically. So, you know,
Right.
that was my mindset towards it. I was all in.
Awesome. I like to think about like different levels of energy when you're, well, for motivation, for moving yourself to a higher level. And you know, sometimes we're in higher states of mind and the loftier, like high vibrational states are enough to like get us out of the bed, get us into this high functioning state where we're like, yeah, I'm creating a better future. I've got this purpose, this thing that I want to offer to the world. But then sometimes we're not always in that high vibrational positive state of mind. So I think having like so-called low vibrational energy of like a little bit of revenge, a little bit of like proving people wrong is always like that's going to be a part of it. Did you feel like that was true for you? Was that kind of you had higher motivational states, but then it was also kind of like, well, I got to make this work because everyone told me that it wouldn't work.
Yeah, interesting. I think because I had that $50,000 kind of safety net in the beginning,
Yeah.
I didn't need to make it work tomorrow, right? It wasn't like a tomorrow type thing. For me, it was a long-term process. So
Yeah.
poker is all about decision making. It's not necessarily about the results, because the results kind of luck oriented sometimes. It's just, are you making good decisions every day? That's the main thing in every hand. So it's really it's analyzing your decisions, not analyzing the results. Because I can get all my money with pocket aces and be an 80% favorite. If I lose, I'm going to lose 20% of the time. time, you know, it doesn't really matter. Like if I lost or win, it's just, was that the right decision for me? So yeah, I mean, even though I was all in on it, I still did take, you know, a few days off here and there, of course, to study and to like analyze my game and to talk it over with some friends or with a coach or something and really like, you know, allow myself to wind down. Because when I would play for
Right.
like 10 hours, and that those 10 hour days would quite were quite tolling on my brain and quite taxing. Because I was just, whenever I wasn't in a hand, I would fold. I would still watch everyone else and what they're doing and try to like pick up reads on them and try to apply that to a hand maybe in 5 hours from now, right? Where I, okay, 5 hours ago he just made this movement with his hand and now he's doing this. Like what's that? What does that mean? And just constantly trying to study the players and really being completely aware of the table and aware of like how I'm feeling as well. You know, some days I'm more tired, some days I'm more worn down. Like hour nine, obviously you're gonna be a lot different than hour one for that day. So understanding that a lot of players, where they go wrong is like when they have a bad day and they keep playing because they want to get their money back, but they're actually on tilt and they're in a bad state of mind. In reality, you should be actually switching it. So let me back up. If they're losing, they want to play longer to get their money back. If they're winning, they want to leave because they already made a good amount for the day, quote unquote. But when they're winning, everyone else is losing and they're in a bad state of mind. So you should actually switch it, play longer hours when you're winning and really go for the throat. And then when you're losing and in a bad state of mind, recognize that and be able to call it a day and come back tomorrow more fresh and with a better kind of state of mind, essentially.
I actually won a little poker game that we played in Bitcoin Jungle. Couple weeks just last week, and
With Paul and some other guy, right? I saw his
yeah, it was
story, I think.
Paul, another Bitcoiner down there, and then Max DeMarco. I haven't played poker in it must have been like 3 or 4 years, but so it was such an interesting process to feel, you know, to feel the loss. We had a little some sats on the line, not very much, but it was just such a fun, like, you know, emotional roller coaster where you get these like dopamine hits. You're like, yeah, I'm fucking winning. And then I lost my entire,
Yeah,
yeah,
you
I
lost all
lost
your
my
chips.
buy-in on the first one. So I had to buy back in. And then I ended up winning at the end. And, but it was like this microcosm, like learning process where I started to kind of figure out everyone's style. But in a certain way, it's still a little unpredictable because they could always, yeah, they could always change it up. But the one guy was, he was getting all, he got three pocket aces throughout the entire game, throughout that one sitting, which
Wow.
I feel like is unheard of.
Yeah, that's pretty
And
rare.
he kept getting all these really good cards. And I was getting shit for the most part. And so I'm like, dude, did this guy, he had like crystals in the corner in Costa Rica. This guy setting up some kind of juju to get him all the good cards. But I realized that he was only betting big when he had really good cards and when he had a good hand. Basically, he didn't bluff much at all. And so that kind of helped me to judge. And he would bet pretty much exactly if it was like a quality hand, if it was like the best hand, he'd bet everything.
Right.
If it was just like
Those
a
medium,
decent
yeah.
quality,
Yeah.
yeah, I'm like, so then I could just basically figure out if I had a better hand than him.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, so even though he's getting really good cards, and you know, there's a lot of luck in poker in every hour or any day, because like the card distribution is random, right? You can only play the cards you get dealt, but
Right.
you can pick up tells on people really quick who are, especially like that guy sounds like a beginner, because he's betting his good hands one way, his meaty hands this way, and his bad hands that way, and they like
Right.
which bucket this fall, and it's like you know, first grade level at that point. It's interesting when you play against the same group of people for every day for like a year. Then that's when you really start to like, you know, because you kind of know everyone at that point and they know you. So like, how do you still play? And that's when it gets interesting
Yeah.
about like balancing certain things. And you know, how do you play a bad hand? How do you play a good hand? Like, you have to really make sure that, you know, they believe your story, but do it on a literally every day for a year. So like, you have to really be kind of like robotic in a way, doing the same thing every hand. Like, you can't. It's just, yeah, it's just interesting to when you think about it like that. But obviously, in any
Right.
if you're playing with guys for a night, once every couple of months, and you can like exploit more and do other shit, like drink your water or whatever you want to do to try to trick them. But yeah, it's
Do you
sounds
think
like a fun time
it's
though.
Yeah, it's fun. Do you think that there's an element where you have to introduce chaos to your behavior, or like a little bit of just you have to be unpredictable to introduce some kind of unpredictability? Is that part of it?
I think it's more about not chaos, but more balance. So how do I look like when I have a good hand, and how do I look like when I have a bad hand? I should look the exact same. You should be no way to, you should be no difference in my actions from your point of
Right.
view, because
Okay.
I want to really make your decision basically neutral. Or I should try to basically organize my ranges and organize the way I'm playing, where it doesn't really matter what you do, because I'm playing such a sound strategy that whether you call or fold, I'm indifferent to, essentially.
Okay.
And then depending on your skill level, I can like and introduce chaos if I feel like that's necessary. But I'm only going to introduce chaos against a person who's not that experienced. If all the experienced players are out of the hand, then I can start to introduce chaos, because that might give me a bigger edge. And that might start to make this guy, you know, if I know who he is and I know his personality, then I can introduce chaos and that might give me a bigger edge and might make me more money this one hand. But I need to be careful because if I play with him a lot, he might pick up on that. And then if I don't introduce chaos, what does that mean? So it's doing it very selectively and very carefully with who you're doing it to and understanding your opponent and really the way they think. Because if you know how they think, then you know how they play. So.
Interesting. So what was it, and I think you touched on this on your when you were talking about what your life was like a year ago, but what was it that inspired a change? Because now, you know, you haven't played poker in a while, brought you out of it. What did you want? What was it about your life that you felt you were missing, that you wanted to seek out? And you went to the Flow Culture retreat and then other retreats as well. And now you're living the dream in Bali.
Enjoying life now for sure. But yeah, basically, poker is, you know, you're indoor, you're sitting down. The games don't start till the afternoon. So, you know, sometimes the games that are good go late into the night. So sometimes, you know, 2, 3, 4 in the morning. You know, by the time you get home, it could be 4, 5, 6, depending on the day, sometimes 2. You know, my schedule is like 2 to 2 type thing, you know, between driving there and driving home, more or less, maybe sometimes 2 to midnight. But it would take me a while to wind down because my mind was racing and I cared so much about every hand I played and every decision I made that I would just sometimes not fall asleep for a while. So when I did go to bed, I wouldn't wake up till like sometimes 11 noon and then do the whole thing over again. And essentially what I was basically doing was I was trading my health for money. And in my 20s, I think it's relatively okay to do that, but you need to be really careful how you, if you do that long term because your health truly is the number one thing you have. As soon as you become sick, all you want to do is become healthy. You'll trade whatever, right? An 80-year-old guy or a 90-year-old guy on his deathbed would trade all of his, you know, a billionaire would trade all of his money to be 20 again or whatever. So as you do this for many years, you don't really know what healthy feels like, essentially. And then when I was locked down, I actually kind of believed COVID for a few months in the beginning of 2020, and I was locking myself down and trying to be careful. I learned, I think maybe around like June or July, that it wasn't that serious for someone my age. So in August, I booked a trip with some friends to Alaska. You know, not many people there. We went to Anchorage, and it was really, really cool. Like the air was really fresh, and I had a really good time. The one thing I learned though was that we went on this hike. It was called the Wolverine Hike, and I didn't really know like what an intense hike was until then. And I still didn't even really when I showed up, I didn't really know what I was getting into. But essentially, it was a 4-hour hike straight up the hill, with like a pretty intense incline. And I was ready to quit one quarter of the way. Only an hour in, I was like, okay, I'm ready to go home. Like my poker legs at that point weren't quite developed, and you know, I just wasn't ready for something like that. But I pushed myself to make it to the end. It was like 2.5 hours down. We had lunch at the top and whatnot, and some snacks. Ever since then, basically, I realized how much I enjoy hiking and how much I enjoy nature and how peaceful it makes me feel and how much I really enjoy that meditative experience. So while we were locked down, basically after that trip, you know, in 2020, 2021, the vaccine started to come out in 2021. You know, I was pushing myself to go outside more and to walk more and to go to the gym and like really take that more seriously because I neglected it for years and years and years, trying to focus on my career, you know, trying to prove everyone wrong, trying to chase my dreams essentially. And yeah, that kind of led to 2023, where I had seen, you know, I was following some people on Twitter. I ran across Shannon's content on Twitter, and she was posting about like birth tourism and having a child in Costa Rica and doing these things and with the Bitcoin economy as well, which seemed cool to me. And I had actually been to Costa Rica 3 times already by the time I seen her post about flow culture. So I was following her for like a few months, and then she posted about a retreat in Costa Rica, and I was like, whoa, like what's this? Like that sounds cool. And it was like a meditation, yoga, breath work, ice baths, retreat for entrepreneurs and creators. And I was like, damn, like I've been to Costa Rica 3 times. Like I've really enjoyed it. I've really enjoyed the nature there. Like I've been getting more into nature recently as well. I like her content, and I like where she's going with this sovereignty angle. I want to meet people like who follow her, who are like-minded to me, and we can all collaborate in this one, you know, retreat experience. And that will kind of give me a more solid, potentially a solid, more solid friend group, meeting more people in this health and wellness space. And because in poker, there is no one in health and wellness. It's just like 99% dudes, which is fine. But like, you know, like I said, the incentives aren't quite there to have a solid friendship. And yeah, as I got more in nature with that Alaska trip, I kind of like realized like poker was actually like not the lifestyle I wanted to live. And I wanted to live a more outdoor lifestyle with more sun and more water and these things. So that was when I applied to the retreat, got accepted, and yeah, the story kind of flows from there. Where I did the World Series of Poker for in the summer, played 48 out of 50 days, and my body was just worn down by that point. Like you can ask Shannon or Sonny, you know, that when I went to that retreat, I was not quite looking too hot. Let's say I was a little more worn down and like dark circles, and you know, just kind of was like a zombie more or less. But yeah, that retreat like really like revitalized me and really like changed, like got me serious about where I am now, basically.
Yeah, it's great. I think that's something that I forget sometimes is how many people are living in that state of disconnection from nature, disconnection from their bodies, from their physicality. You know, so much of people's work now is just up in their heads. They're just trying to like be compliant and do the right thing, be fit within a proper structure, and they're living indoors, working indoors in fluorescent lighting and not getting sunlight. So just and to think about how I feel, what my health is like if I'm like traveling for a couple of days and I'm in a plane for a long period of time, sitting for a long period of time, like it's your our bodies, you know, we're just meant to be moving. We're meant to be outside. We're meant to be doing all these things that are just unfortunately not a regular like integral part of modern civilized life. Yeah, it's
Yeah,
a
and I think a lot of the issue with that though is like those people who are in that modern civilized life and they're not feeling that great maybe. They don't
yeah.
necessarily even know what healthy feels like. And I think that's why I was able to do poker for 6.5, 7 years is I didn't even know what it really felt like to be healthy. So I thought everything was normal. I'd wake up at noon, have some coffee, I would get a little energy jolt kind of from that. Never really go outside. I was kind of pale. Wasn't in sync with the sun, obviously, in nature and just how the circadian rhythm type thing works.
Right.
And I just to me it was normal, and I didn't I just didn't know. But now obviously, if I went back to play poker, I would hate it instantly and want to be moving around and want to be like not sitting there staring at people. It's so serious. And yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we it like I'm looking outside, it's so beautiful right now. But we really thrive as humans, when we're outside and when we're playing, we're moving around, we're laughing, we're dancing, we're singing. That's when we really, I think, feel a lot of joy. So yeah.
Yeah, I agree. We've done some singing and dancing and laughing together, our
In
fair
the
share
trenches. Yeah.
in the
W in
trenches.
the trenches, while in the trenches. Looks beautiful, by the way, where you at? Just so you know. Is that
Yeah,
Swiss flat? No.
this is Lisbon. So I've got the Parliament Building, Palacio, right behind me, and then the Tager River, I believe it is. That's the river mouth, and then the ocean is just past that bridge there.
Oh, yeah. It looks kind of like Greece. I was just there in May, so it looks a little bit like that to me. Maybe that one's a little more city-like, I think, but. Yeah, it seems cool.
Yeah, it's a beautiful city. So it's such a blessing to have this like terrace, sun terrace, get sun all day long. It's amazing.
Hell yeah. You're one of the only guys I've come across that's, I mean, me, you, Paul, I think are the top three, but top, like the most tan dudes, from the past few months.
Yeah, I did see one older dude who looked like, you know, I think he's Greek or something coming from Miami that he may have had us beat, dude,
Been
on the
following the sun
airport in the airport.
for like 40 years, damn.
Right, like
That's cool.
something to aspire to, right?
Hell yeah.
So one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you and is because we've had a lot of talks about masculinity with my channel, Citadel Theory, and what I'm doing with the retreats. I'm trying to foster an environment for guys to grow into their mature masculine, and to me it's kind of taking shape in more of a community. We're touching base once in a while. We're sharing, getting together to share difficulties, share obstacles, and then like big opportunities and helping each other kind of optimize and overcome these types of things in life. And yeah, I think you have a very solid, like masculine frame, just in social interactions and relationships and things that I've observed. I commend you, sir, on your masculine frame.
Thank you, sir.
And you also posted a while back, like mature masculinity is also, it's not necessarily solely focused on the masculine. There's also, we do have a feminine part of us, and there is a sense of balance there. Like what it embracing the mature masculine has, it brings in certain aspects of the feminine. So what does mature masculinity look like to you to begin with?
So I think it's a person that can have his masculine side developed, of course. What does that mean? He needs to have, I think, be a good leader. He needs to be bold. He needs to be confident. He needs to know who he is on the inside and where he's going in life. He has to have a direction and a purpose and a mission. So every man should have a mission in life. What is it on earth that they're here to do, right? Some like Elon, for example, is here to go to Mars or whatever, that's his mission. So every man has their own mission. It's important to understand what is your mission. Okay. A lot of men don't have theirs, which is why when they don't have a mission, they'll distract themselves with pleasure and with things that are just aimlessly wandering around because they don't have a purpose. They don't know what they're doing. They don't have a direction. if your masculine side is overdeveloped without a strong feminine side, that's when things can start to lead to war and you start to become too it's just too much masculinity essentially. So it's important to have a feminine side developed where you have a more gentle, kind of surrendering, empathetic side where you can understand women, listen to them, understand children, like kind of be more soft and have that available to you. So you're more of a well-rounded man. This will basically make your life, I feel like, 10 times easier because you'll be able to attract whatever it is in your life that you want because of this aura you now have about you, where you're confident, you're a leader, you're bold, but you can also soften and surrender when you need to. That to me is like the complete man, I feel, in nowadays. That man is kind of unstoppable. And he's in this frequency of love and he's quite powerful, I feel, as a force and as a figure.
So one of my questions around that is, I guess one thing is, I wonder if there is, do you think there's a process where you have to maybe go into a period of your life where you are fully focused in and I guess enveloped in masculine energy almost entirely, and almost to have that, to know what it's like to go to, say, to go to war, to be on your purpose, and to say fuck everything else, and then from there recognize the need for the feminine, the need for gentleness and softness. I guess what I'm saying is, I wonder if the majority of guys nowadays don't even get to the point where it's like the feminine nature. I think a lot of guys are just so in their feminine, and that it's very rare to meet someone who's actually a masculine dude.
For
And
sure.
I guess one of the things that I'm defining masculinity as is not just like dominance. Usually when people think about masculinity, they think, or they'll categorize all the, like these toxic, they'll just immediately associate it with toxic masculinity, or aggression, or hatred, or violence, which are parts of the masculine, but the abuse of those traits is part of the shadow, right? We we've read the book King Warrior Magician Lover. I think it's a helpful book for people to read to understand what a balanced view of masculinity is, and what the mature masculinity is. And for the king archetype, the shadow is the tyrant, but it's also the weakling, right? And so, or maybe, wait, is the shadow of the warrior the weakling?
Yeah, I think so. King,
So
yeah,
what is
king, like
shadow?
be a king, don't be a tyrant. Tyrant.
So there's one shadow. There's a shadow of like proactivity, which is a tyrant, but then there's a shadow of neglect, which I believe is, I think it's the weakling. I think maybe the shadow of the warrior is the coward or something like that. But I gotta look it up. But you get what I'm saying, right? Where maybe is there a lot of guys just don't even get to the point where they've activated the warrior, they've activated the strength and the ability to even be aggressive, or to express and be violent if the case calls for it, right? Do you know what I'm saying?
I do. I think it has to do with maybe the way the school system is in the beginning. It kind of teaches you to be obedient, not necessarily be a critical thinker and not to think outside the box. Like those kids in my math class, right? 20 of them were inside that box, didn't even think about it, went home, sent them on their way. Yeah, I think it depends about how you're raised, how your parents are, and stuff. For me personally, I don't think I really had a developed masculine side. Maybe I did, but I don't know. It's hard to say until recently. One thing that's helped me kind of with the warrior thing is doing classes like in jujitsu or going to boxing classes and things that really allow me to be in that space for like an hour and a half with other men and really test my skills physically to one, put myself outside my comfort zone, which I think most people don't do. They want to stay in their comfort zone, which you don't grow doing that. And then, allows me to get uncomfortable, allows me to grow, allows me to lose basically, because I'm losing every time as a beginner. And that on the other side of discomfort is usually something great. But a lot of men, they're scared to be uncomfortable, and they would rather scroll TikTok, you know, whatever, Instagram all day, and just do their 9 to 5 and go home and have sex with their girl and, you know, call it a day, you know, saying like that'd be it. I think there's a lot of benefit from young men. I was talking to my grandpa recently. He's in France. He went to war in the 60s. He thinks that a lot of men should go in the military and join the army and do that. I don't think that's necessarily true for all guys. I think what they should do though is move outside of their hometown and get outside of their bubble, go travel the world and go to different places and maybe live on a budget and meet new people from different cultures and really put yourself in a more risky situation, and not risky physically, but like, you know, like making new friends and trying to talk to people and talking to women and talking to men. And like that, I think will actually teach them a lot, you know, a lot of experience doing that. And then yeah, joining classes like MMA or going to yoga class and really kind of go inward and start to get more meditative, I think could help as well. But yeah, I know what you mean. I think what you're trying to say is like people are maybe too obedient nowadays, and they're too much following the direction of, they're more sheep-like people kind of thing, not necessarily lions. I think that's what you're getting at, I feel.
And it's also your kind of what I guess Jordan Peterson talks about, where if you can, the harmless person is not as virtuous as the powerful person necessarily, because the powerful person is able to, he's able to withhold, he's making a decision of how he's using his power, and he's able to influence more, butchering it a little bit. But the idea is, like, if you don't cultivate yourself, if you don't have the ability to, say, like, defend yourself or hold yourself well in a fight, then you're going to be more timid. You're going to shy away from situations where you could be more engaged, where you could actually be a generative force in the world. And so, instead of like saying anger bad, aggression bad, or violence bad, it's a much more balanced understanding of things to say, well, no, those things are necessary, but there's a time and a place for them. And it comes with maturity. In order, A mature man is able to know the time and the place for those things. And perhaps it's the same with women and seduction. For a lot of guys, obviously, with statistics, it looks like most dudes are not don't have any kind of sexual life at all, which is kind of a lot of people, like, large amount. But
Yeah.
then, which is horrible, but there's also, the other extreme, where since there's been such a void of I think religion, spirituality, or tradition in the past 10 in the past like 20, 30 years, it's kind of our cultural values have basically made it so that it's like, well, anything goes to a certain extent, if as long as you're staying within, like, woke guidelines, I guess. But for a mature man to go through, it's almost like you have to choose your rites of passage. You have to actively cultivate them in your own life. And if you are trying to improve, say, that you're dating in relationships, and you go out and you start to get better results, so to speak, with women, with having intimate experiences, it can also become more of an obsession, or something where that you're abusing it, or it's unbalanced, and it's and just because, it's getting yourself into situations where just because you can doesn't mean you should. And that's what happens with a lot of guys who kind of take that route. And perhaps it's the same with violence and fighting, like getting to the point where you just want to fight all the time. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, for the guy who wants to, I guess what I'm wondering is it more virtuous? Is it more virtuous for a man to be able to have, like, competency in all these areas, but then be able to restrain himself? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Joe Rogan, I heard one time, like a year ago or something, he's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. And he was like, it's really nice because I have this tool in my arsenal now where if someone messes with my girl at the bar, or someone does this, my friend or whatever, I have now the option to me
Right.
available to mess with this guy or I can let him go. Right. He has the choice. So
Right.
when you have these tools in your tool belt and you're kind of a more developed masculine and you're a good actor, you're going to use these tools available to you in a healthy way, ideally. And you're not going to abuse one. And that's kind of the whole point is having balance, right, between the masculine and the feminine, knowing what it is to take to step back, let things happen naturally, and knowing what it is to step in and actually use some aggression, I guess. But you're helpless or you're useless if you don't have these tools available to you. So it's important to do the work, and improve yourself every day as a man. For me, not comparing myself to you or any other man that's out there, it's literally me against who I was yesterday. Okay. How can I improve myself and get better today? Whether that's through a yoga class or through going to meditation, doing breath work or doing 100 push-ups or whatever, reading a book, a million things you can do, obviously, to improve yourself. But it's just doing being
Right.
consistent with it because consistency is gonna eventually take you far. But yeah, I mean, I just enjoy having the tools available to me because I have a good head on my shoulders. I'm aware of what's going on. These tools will help me in my life and will help protect me and my family later down the line. So yeah, basically have the tool available to you, use it as you see fit and make the world a better place. Spread love, be a good person, say hi to people on the street, do your thing. So yeah.
Yeah, are there any other like daily routines or habits that you've tried to incorporate into your life? I don't know, you just kind of went over a few of them, but that actually have helped you to cultivate this and continue to develop your masculinity and your maturity.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's just consistent education. I didn't have an older brother. I had a father who had alcohol issues when I was in high school and wasn't necessarily a great leader, a great role model for me. I learned a lot from him throughout my life for sure. But from being like a mature masculine man, I enjoy reading books. The Way of the Superior Man has been great. The King, Warrior, Lover, Magician has been great. I follow a few accounts on Instagram and Twitter that help me just little tips and tricks here and there. I enjoy now that I'm out of poker and it's been sitting a lot of sitting, a lot of indoors, a lot of late nights, waking up early, going outside, moving around, looking at the sun, getting my circadian rhythm more dialed in. The last few days, been going to the beach in the morning, which has been great. Doing some breath work there, going in the ocean water, just walking around, getting some movement in, saying hi to some people, kind of starting my day nice and slow, but also productive. That for me is going to set the tone to have a productive day and improve myself in any way I can compared to yesterday, essentially. So yeah, it's kind of a bummer with my scooter accident. I was out for 3 weeks, but
Right.
still try to read and yeah, it's just become a better version of me. So
Yeah. It's, I've heard, what's the saying? It's like people overestimate what they can do in like a couple months, but underestimate what they could do in a couple of years or something like that. It's like if you take a broader, maybe a longer time horizon and think of what's possible if you take incremental changes daily. If you're improving by 0.5% every day, then over the course of a year, that's a massive improvement. In skill development, it's the same way. If you're practicing something daily, whether it's a language or speaking or yoga or martial art or whatever, it's amazing how you can look back over time and see the massive amount of change. But while you're in it, maybe it's more about just like enjoying the process and getting in touch with what it is about those things every day that brings you into the present moment, that brings a sense of wholeness into your life.
Yeah, definitely. One there's a cool math problem that kind of like goes to what you're saying. If you take the number 1.00, so you're getting 0% better every day, you're getting 0% worse. Obviously, if you multiply that to the 365th power, which is every day you get 0% better and 0% worse, at the end of 1 year, you'll still be one. One will be one. Okay. If you get 1% better every day, so 1.01 to the 365th power, which obviously is hard to do, of course, 1% better every day, but it's doable in the beginning, of course. You get at the end of 1 year, the answer is 37. So you're 37 times better by getting 1%, 1% better every day at the end of 1 year. So it just shows how powerful that exponential growth is. And if you continue to just improve yourself, obviously maybe not 1%, but 0.5%, whatever, you can make
Right.
substantial change in 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. I think 6 months is like really the time you need to really consistently, I think, to really see a noticeable difference. Obviously, more is better, of course, but yeah, if you can go travel for
Right.
6 months and disappear kind of thing, you're to return lean and healthy and strong, and people are like, "What the hell happened to you?" Like, how'd you like what happened? Only 6 months? But yeah, I
Right.
think there's a lot of like you said, people underestimate a couple months, but a couple years is it's really powerful the difference you can make.
Yeah. How has community played a part in your growth so far this year?
I think community is such an underrated part of people's lives, but I think it's probably one of the most important thing to real fulfillment and real happiness is how are the quality of your friendships and relationships in your life? If you really do, I feel like become the five people you hang out with the most. So if you're with a bunch of dudes who have ambition and courage and strength, and they're on a path, and you're with them every day, which was kind of what it's been like for me, more or less, in Mexico specifically, and Costa Rica as well, with you and those guys. You just really don't want to slack. Like you're so motivated to be better every day, and you're just like having that kind of support group is really, really vital. And yeah, like I think a lot of people, they want good friends and they want good relationships and they want a great partner, but like they need to think about how do I attract those people into my lives? And you need to provide value to them. Like I can't force you to be my friend. I have to provide value to you and I have to give you something in return. So it's important if you're looking for new friends, probably you need to change your environment, maybe one, but two, what kind of qualities would make you a better friend and would make you a better person? And look yourself in the mirror and be really honest with yourself. Like how can I improve myself and improve my day-to-day routines, and how can I become a higher vibration person? Maybe you skip the Friday night alcohol going out with the boys thing for a couple of weeks, or whatever, for a couple of months, and you focus on more holistic stuff, like maybe going to a yoga class Saturday morning at 8 a.m. And yeah, I mean, I really feel like just the people that surround you really do affect your life hugely, and you become what goes into your body and who you listen to, and like that's who you become essentially. So definitely like that, those retreats, Flow Culture twice and Bio Culture, like those things have really set the bar high for me for like what kind of friend I can attract into my life, what kinds of friends I demand in my life now. And I just don't have time for the lower vibration people anymore. Like I really have my boundaries set, and I know that my attention is valuable. I know that my friendship is valuable. I know that I have a lot of knowledge within me, and I know that I'm a great friend and I'm a good person. So I need to really just demand greatness out of these people and really have a high bar for myself. So I think community is everything. And that's why I think what you're doing with the retreats is a really cool thing with the Citadel Theory stuff, trying to find your tribe and trying to be around some good men and some good women, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And the one of the big realizations that I had pretty early on in my path of just trying to level up in life is how, as much as we try to be independent, we try to maintain our like individuality in all these different ways, the reality is we are sponges. We're absorbing from our environment constantly. So it's just something I always try to keep in mind when I'm in certain situations, and is who am I around and how are they influencing me, and what is it? Are they inspiring individuals? Are they people that I want to emulate? Because we pretty much are always imitating, and we have, I think we do have unique ideas, and we have a unique imprint, and a calling that we're able to express, and we're able to really hone in on. And so that independence is huge, very important. But we have to recognize our limitations. We're not the lone wolf warrior that I think can be stereotyped. Like even, and as a masculine man, I think that's maybe something that can be overlooked, is our need for brotherhood, or our need for connectivity and connection. And maybe it's not, maybe you can function without it, but like to be fully optimized, like and to have the kind of life you want, it's just so much better when you're around good people. Even Paul and I talk about all the time, like surfing perfect waves when you're alone is fun, but to surf perfect waves with a few friends out is exponentially better. It just increases the experience tenfold. So that's one of the things I like to focus on too, is just the pure enjoyment of life. It's just so much better when you have good quality friends around.
Definitely. But one thing to keep in mind, though, is that let's say you have a group of friends already who maybe aren't the group that you necessarily see the future with. You're not just going to go straight from that group to group B. Like it just doesn't happen overnight. So there's going to have to be that transition phase where you are going to have to be more in a solitude type environment and be by yourself because you demand greatness out of these guys and these aren't the guys you want to be with. That transition phase will be lonely. And some guys can't handle that. Like
Certainly.
they have to be around people all the time and they can't handle being by themselves and actually meditating and actually thinking about life. Like, see it as more solitude and not loneliness. You're in a transition phase and you need to be patient with that, to get these, maybe brothers or sisters or whatever you're looking for, let's say brothers into your life. Focus on yourself and become that high vibration person. As you become that, you'll start to meet people and they're going to be in different places than at the places you were with previously with the other buddies. So yeah, understand it's a process and the end point is group B and it's a great point. If there's the reward is really there, like you said, surfing with these guys it just brings you a lot of joy. But you have to be patient and work through that middle zone to get there
Yeah, totally.
and understand it's not an overnight thing and understand that you're going faster by not hanging out with group A. So, oh, like I'm bored tonight. I want to hang out with these guys. No, you're actually going slower going back to them. You need to continue down this more lonely path and until you find, your tribe kind of thing. So yeah, that's what I would say.
That's a really important point. Yeah, if I th most of the peak experiences that I can think of in life, in my life so far, and quality friendships, communities that I've been a part of have always like there's always been a period of loneliness, a long period of loneliness before that. So yeah, I could see that for sure. And maybe not necessarily loneliness, but solitude for sure, where it's I've been on the path, just improving and leveling up, developing the habits of discipline and everything to get to the point where I actually have things in common with these people instead of it being a one-way relationship. I also wonder, we're both pretty enthusiastic about Bitcoin, and this is Citadel theory, I think an integral part of creating a Citadel and the kind of life where you're having fun living free is financial freedom. And I'm wondering, how has Bitcoin empowered you and been a part of that, a part of your life, kind of establishing your own financial independence?
Yeah, I think Bitcoin for me specifically has been a really good savings account. As COVID started to roll around, a couple of years later and whatnot, I realized like how serious the money printing issue is worldwide with fiat currencies. So yeah, I started to get more into it and started to read more about it. And yeah, I think I see it as a really good tool for humanity to be able to save their wealth and their energy. It's your energy really, because your time is you've put all this energy into making the money. You want to save it now in a form of money that can't be debased. So yeah, Bitcoin I think is a really good tool. Of course, keep in mind it's very volatile and it has a lot of ups and downs. But definitely, having financial freedom is a very, very important thing. And if you have that, you can travel the world and work remote and do what you got to do at that point. And it's something that I'm very thankful for. That is available to us. We can put our money in and choose to support something that is ethical and that is humane, essentially. And then, yeah, having like a Citadel Theory type community, you guys all on one kind of standard would be very helpful, of course. And having that community built around it, with the food and whatnot. So yeah, it's a lot of good to it. Curious to see, how it takes place. It's only 15 years old, so maybe by the time it's 25, 35 years old, 25, 30 years old, maybe, it'll have grown a lot. So we'll see.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Bo, thanks so much for your time, buddy. It's really good to catch up, and I think this is a really valuable conversation. I think a lot of people get a lot out of it. So appreciate it, man.
Cool, man. I appreciate you having me on. It's my first ever podcast, so I'm glad that things went well, and I'm glad to catch up with you, of course.
Killed it, bro. Do you have anything that you want to share with the audience? If people want to get in touch with you, if they connect with your story, you know, plug your Instagram or anything like that that I should share in the notes.
Yeah, sure. I'm on Instagram, Bo Win, or sorry, Bo.win, BEAU dot WINN. I'm in the process of building it up. In poker, I was very much hidden and trying to like kind of keep myself more unknown. Now that I'm out of poker, I kind of want to share more of my journey. So yeah, I got a few posts and debating starting a brand up. We'll see. I got some plans, I'm thinking about things, but yeah, we'll see. So you can follow me there, hit me up if you have questions or want to talk to me one-on-one about my journey or just about masculinity and how to improve your life. That'd be a good place. So, yeah.
Awesome. Thanks, buddy.
Cool, man. Peace.